Ashanti, I'm a Wally Alston.
Thank you. I am nervous today because this room is packed. I like that. It's a great way to be here in Portland, where I've been wanting to come for a long time. I want to get started off in a way that helps me to get the butterflies and to help get us a little bit stirred as well. So, you know, we always say power to the people, you know. And usually the response back is all power to the people. So I want real hearty, if you don't mind indulging me, you know, power to the people.
All power to the people.
I ain't even got to tell y'all twice. You just say, can you say it again? Right on. Second thing, to just take us back again, it's kind of like a march, a chant that goes along with a little march that we used to do. I need your participation with it, if I may. May I? Oh, it's such a lively crowd, man. I'm gonna say something, and you're gonna say free the people, right? So it's gonna go something like this. I'm gonna say, hold your head up high, Panthers marching by. We don't take no jive. And when I say sound off, you say free the people. And then at a certain point, I'm gonna say break it on down. And you're gonna say, free the people, free the people, free the people. And then one loud one, free the people. We got it? Right on, right on. Okay. Hold your head up high, Panthers marching by. We don't take no jive, got a loaded 45. Sound off.
Free the people.
Sound off.
Free the people.
Break it on down.
Free the people,
free the people, free the people,
free the people.
Right on. Now imagine, in certain cities, certain towns where there was chapters, there is like rank and file Panthers. We are marching down the street, and here we are with this chant. Now you have got to imagine, it is performance, but it's performance that's really important. We are trying to show people that we are a disciplined force that are ready to act. You know, we are trying to show people that there is a new role for us to play in this story, you know, and here we are, you know, we're the Black Panther Party. Not only about the 45, but not without it. And, you know, but it was the organizing, it was the educating, it was being available to help people to figure out ways to resist that made the Black Panther Party what it became. You know, and I mean, we did the best we could. I was young, Plainfield, New Jersey, small town. But it's like, hey, Plainfield had the same problems that every other town that had Black folks in them. We was getting treated bad. You know, we stepped forward like so many other young folks, teenagers, just in high school. Now you got to imagine what our parents thought. When my parents knew, I didn't come up to them one day and say, Mom, Pops, I'm joining the Black Panther Party. They just kind of noticed that I was hanging out with some different people, you know? And now I'm not sitting in front of the television anymore watching the comedies or whatever. I'm sitting up here reading Malcolm X autobiography or Malcolm X Speaks to the point where my father would actually get angry at me. Why is my head always stuck in this book? And sometime he said, get out the living room. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go outside and find my crew and hang out with my crew. But it was where my head was at because I was a product of the 60s, a product that was, in every sense of the word, magical for so many of us. And what I tell people about the 60s that I just want you to get is that, as far as the Black community is concerned, we came alive as no other generation in this country since we was kidnapped and brought here 400 years before. We had been brainwashed, whipped, beat down, denied everything that had just trained us to not think of any possibility different than what white supremacy had laid down for us. But now here's the 60s. in the 60s is telling us you can be everything. But specifically, black is beautiful. Africa is our roots, and be proud of it. We had just came from a generation, all them past generations that had just accepted that niggas ain't shit. Niggas will never organize, will never get it together, you'll never do it. Now, all of a sudden, there's something capturing us. There's something in the air that's saying black power, that's tying us into struggles not only in Africa, but Asia, Latin America, and then right here within the United States, because the civil rights movement was in its upswing. The Native American struggles were coming up, the Puerto Rican struggles, the Chicano struggles, the anti-war movement, the women's movement, it was in the air. So why not little 13, 14, 15-year-old Ashanti, known as Michael at the time, you know, not get involved? Why am I, I'm just like any other, I want to know what I can do. And I don't think I was any different from a Palestinian teenager who was answering them questions right now in occupied Palestine. I saw what the civil rights movement was doing, respected it. But when I seen them Panthers, and when my best friend Jihad seen them Panthers, we seen that a magazine rack had a particular cover with Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale on the front cover. Black beret, black leather jacket, powder blue shirt, all down to the combat boots and weapons, one on the side and one in the hands. We knew right then and there we want to find out about them. Right? And then to find out that they organize survival programs, that they have liberation schools, that they are actually teaching black people how to defend themselves because they said it was our right. Going contrary to all the things we were seeing on television with just white reaction in the South and other places was just brutalizing black people down there, killing folks, not only black folks down there, but even white activists who was coming down there to help in solidarity, disappearing them, and then maybe finding them years later, and I'm sure there's still a lot of other bodies that are still in swamps somewhere, you know. But still, we're coming in. Seeing all this didn't frighten us or discourage us. It made us want to step up more. More. So now we are learning. Panthers from New York and Newark, different places are coming to Plainfield to show us what it means to be a Panther, you know. And the first thing that we was hoping to get close to was the guns. But just like other comrades, they share the stories, the thing that we get is not the physical guns, but we get the books, which were the guns that we first was given, placed in our hands. We're going to read France Fanon, Wretched of the Earth, Mao Zedong's quotations. Everybody had a red book. W.E.B. Du Bois, Robert Williams, Negroes with Guns. We are reading. And many like me didn't like to read at all because of what school has done to us. I didn't like to read. But you inspired now. There's something in you that is just different now. You want to know. I want to know everything about Africa. I want to know everything about Harriet Tubman. I want to know all this stuff here. So yeah, I'm reading now. We got study groups. Here is black folks sitting together in study circles, helping each other learn, you know? Here we are now learning how to go out in the community and help tenants figure out ways to resist all the stuff that landlords do. Here we are now trying to show people how to fight back against these racist killer police. Heavy duty. And I'm telling you, when we first stepped out in our community, people did not trust us. Because like me and others, a lot of us was called to lumping, and a lot of us were. A lot of us was kind of into like little hustles or just maybe gangs, but nothing like the gangs now. But me, I was on the border between wanting to be a burglar and a revolutionary. And actually, later on, kind of combined both of them, you know. But the Panthers showed us that revolution involved engaging your community and organizing them. Helping to give them a sense of hope that we could change our circumstances. And to know that we was doing it in concert with all these other communities and movements was heavy, was heavy. I did not like white folks. I was stone nationalist. Didn't want to work with them. And it was the Panthers that helped to kind of broaden my perspective on that. And it's like, yo, you can't be hating on them because they white. You know, you might not want to deal with them because of what they do. But if you got a white revolutionary that's here to support you and to be your ally, you can embrace him or her. You know, and even me moving into that grudgingly, I learned to relax and accept white folks. Because Plainfield did not encourage that because it was a very racist place. But we're seeing a different kind of revolution, especially for a revolutionary nationalist group. It was heavy. Gradually, the community started to support us. The back and forth between our desire to break a certain hypnosis and a certain psychosis around being a victim in this society to learning that you can be free individuals and actually start to love each other was powerful. But the government, of course, this is not a loving society. It's a very death-oriented society, a very hateful society. Don't stand for that. No group that has been kept systematically on the bottom of the society is going to be allowed to come from the bottom of that society. You ain't disturbing nothing. The history of this country says so. We understood 500-year war. This is 500 years, a continuation, no break from when the Europeans first came here and did what they did, Christopher Columbus and all of them. You know, we understood that. This is a liberation war. No different from the Zimbabwes, no different from the indigenous nations fighting for sovereignty, no different from the Vietnamese fighting to get the United States out of their country. We said, United States out of the ghettos. You know, that may have been where they confined us, but then we began to look at the ghettos. Oh, you got us here, now it's ours. You get out, and we're going to take over the institutions, the voice of Malcolm X. Take them over. We became revolutionaries, but we understood we're up against a monster that will kill us without a blink of an eye. Huey P. Newton had already been in jail. They was trying to frame him for the cop that got killed. Bobby Seale was being framed for the murder of him and Erica Huggins in New Haven, Connecticut. Fred Hampton had got killed and Mark Clark in 1969. We understood, but it didn't stop us. As we read, we organized. As we read, we fought. That's praxis. That's like putting it right into practice. We are developing as we go. We ain't got to wait to have no developed ideology. We ain't got to wait to have all the answers. We'll figure it out as we go because our situation is that bad. We don't have the luxury of sitting back and doing all kind of fanciful ideological positions. We'll figure it out as we go. But we took hits. My first hit in jihad's first hit was a cop got killed in my hometown. So what do? They get the two main organizers and they blame it on them. This is me and Jihad. We're 17 years old, first month in a senior year in high school. They know we didn't do it. They know that. They know Mumia didn't kill the cop. They know that. It's not a question of innocence or guilt. They know what they're doing. Break the potential of this becoming a solid movement in Plainfield, New Jersey. Get Michael and David off the streets. 14 months. The last 4 months was the trial, and if it wasn't for the fact we had good lawyers, no telling. I never say, well, we would have been on death row or we would have been in prison for life. My thing is we would have found a way to get out of there. Because even during that 14 months, we was on a hacksaw blade cutting this window, trying to get out before the jury even got the case. 17, because we understood we are warriors at war. No ifs, ands, and buts. White jury came back with a not guilty verdict. Lawyers were able to show classic frame up. We're out. We're back in the ranks. New York is, and New Jersey chapters are under heavy attack. FBI forces, local police forces. They're losing members. The government, the media, police forces were very successful at isolating us from our communities. They were very successful, calling us thugs, murderers, or just terrorizing people that we were dealing with. One example is that, and man, y'all got to tell me on the time. New York, I was back and forth between the New York chapter and the Plainfield chapter. The breakfast program in New York had always been very successful in Harlem. Harlem had eight chapters, though New York City had eight chapters altogether. But the Harlem chapter, the food program, every day, feeding the children. One day, some of the children get sick. And all of a sudden, the parents start pulling their children out. We find out years later through the counterintelligence paper that the police poisoned the fruit. So that's why they pulled the children out. It's no big deal about what they're going to go through because they are that cold-blooded. They're not going to let anybody come in and mess this thing up. Got to kill you? Kill you. Got to discourage people from coming to you? Discourage them. Right? But they were good. We get isolated. Then when they have charges against us and pick us up, people are not quick to come to our support. They had Panthers who were part of the Black Liberation Army who was locked up in the Manhattan House of Detention. They are political prisoners. They're being charged with an ambush in New York and an ambush out in San Francisco. And it's actually the San Francisco 8 case. Here I am, 19 years old, and I'm approached by one of the members of the Panther Party who asked me would I become a member of a cell, the Black Liberation Army. My partner at the time was pregnant. I have to think now, what am I going to do? You know, I want to be around for this child, daddy. I mean, I don't know nothing about being a daddy for real at 19, but just the idea, you know. But also, I want to win this revolution. So my decision is going under. Maybe I won't be around for the victory because we still thought it was right around the corner. But maybe the child will come into a free world. All right, so here I am. I come back to the sister and I'm like, you got me and you got one of my comrades who was a year younger than me. We are here. We were waiting. It was an honor to join the ranks of the Black Liberation Army. I'm proud of it to this day. And actually my children are too, and I'm happy about that. But the thing is, we went to get these political prisoners out of the Manhattan House of Detention. I'm bringing this up for a reason. To be free, you have to be a little crazy. Harriet Tubman, back and forth, how many times? She got to be a little crazy. Nat Turner, a little crazy. All the movements that got to face the viciousness of white supremacy, you got to be a little crazy. You ain't going to be free otherwise by doing things so careful and so convenient. You know, you want to be free? It's the same thing. If you want to learn something, sometimes you got to be a little daring about the material you pick up and read, because it may change your whole life. So here we are. Manhattan House of Detention is just concrete, steel buildings. The Manhattan area, the federal building is down there, court building, the state, immigration, police, all around. But here's the Black Liberation Army. We are no different from them Vietnamese guerrillas up against the United States. American imperialism is a paper tiger. We read France Fanon, you know, and we learned from France Fanon that if you can look your enemy in the eye, that fear will drop. Break the fear, and you'll see that they're not invincible. It's our fear of them that keeps them in power. So here we go. They're on trial every day. We're allowed to bring them food. Take the food to the jail. You give the bag to the police. He goes through it, gives it to the prisoners, takes it back to the prisoners. But on one particular day, when we put that bag on the table, we don't let the police go through the bag. We open it up and we pull out the guns. We take them guards, we put them in the bathroom, and I always very proud to say this, we handcuff them to the toilets. Because that's the job that they do. The attitude, I say this because of the attitude, to be free. Attitude is very important. You gotta believe it, you cannot have fear of these people. So here they go, we're up to the second floor to the visiting room. A solid wall of steel, windows, telephones, no contact. Got the bag with us. Next thing that comes out the bag is an acetylene torch. And I proceed to cut. I wasn't supposed to be the one to cut. It was supposed to be somebody else who was professional. He couldn't make it at the time. Somebody had to do it. I gave myself a crash course, did the best I could. I'm cutting. The prisoners on the other side had taken care of the guards. The visitors on the other side of just regular people, they watching me, but this is New York. Ain't nobody, listen, this is, you know, I'm cutting. But if I was experienced, I could have been did zip, 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 push it out, y'all come on. And we're sure that most of them prisoners would have came out too. But it took me a long time to the point where I had 2 inches to go and the oxygen tank ran out. And that's the thing that really cuts into the metal when you got that flame on it. So now I got to look at the political prisoners and I got to look at my comrades, you know, and you got to make a decision. We got to go. We got to go. It was hard for me for 2 reasons. One, we're not getting them out. Two of the women in our cell, it was their partners behind that wall too, that iron wall. And the families was waiting. We had them somewhere else. And we was all gonna hook up after we got everybody out. So quickly, we gotta go. You turn to your comrades, power to the people. We out. They understood. We're gone. Next thing you know, my family jokes about it to this day. Usually when I disappear, they just got to turn on the news, you know. So they turn on the news. Here's the thing about the Manhattan House of Detention, and here's their son's picture. We know where Michael is, or we know where he was. In the course of other things, bank expropriation in New Haven, Connecticut, and I did not say robbery, because we're revolutionaries. We don't commit crimes. But we will go after them banks' monies because it's blood money. We will fund the revolution. We will hit drug dealers. We will hit banks. We will hit insurance companies. We will hit armored cars. We are at war. And that's certainly what we did. But during this bank expropriation, New Haven, Connecticut, Wild West shootout, 3 of us are captured. I'm one of them. First day in court, we tell them, you have no right to even try us. We are soldiers of the Black Liberation Army. We ain't in here for no justice. We're soldiers. We ain't asking for nothing. We know what the deal is gonna be. This is a firefight. They had guns, we had guns. We are prisoners of war at this point. When they was trying to frame us, we were political prisoners. With this, we're prisoners of war. We're in action. That type of action and others is where many of the political prisoners that Jericho represents. Jaleel Muntakeem, Albert Noah Washington, and a whole bunch of others out of the Black Liberation Army. And we represent folks from the Weather Underground who place bombs in a lot of places. We make no ifs, ands, and buts about it. We are at war. This is revolution. We want to bring this empire, as George Jackson says, to its knees. No ifs and buts, but here we are. We didn't get a lot of support. The left backed up from us. They called us infantile leftists. They used every Marxist expression they could find. You know, the liberals, of course, is not going to touch us, but they terrified our communities. So they were scared. And it wasn't but maybe the nationalist groups or the really solid white supporters who stuck with us. We didn't make it out of them jails either, but boy, we tried. We tried. Got sentenced to 45 years. Here I am off to Oxford, Wisconsin. Next thing, Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Next thing, Marion, Illinois. Then Lompoc, California. Then I got to come back to Connecticut. But they moved us around like that. They would not let us be anybody in the same place together. But at one point, there were so many of us, we had collectives. Panthers, BLA, Weather Underground, Puerto Rican Independentistas. We're fighting. We're organizing inside. We're trying to figure out ways to get out. These are many of the individuals who Jericho represent. Because we come out of liberation movements here that operate off of that 500-year war understanding that this system is not able to reform or do anything humane. Our freedom and its death go together. Clear. But we don't get a lot of support. To this day, we don't get monies. Foundations don't give us monies, you know. People in the community don't even know who we are. That's the deal. Why? Because this system was very effective in not only putting down resistance, but giving people so many diversions that encouraged them to forget about that. And many parents, family, neighbors, friends, communities, for the sake of survival and not endangering their families and children, didn't talk about it. Other communities is part of this, is part of what they do. You pass the stories on. Ours didn't do it. People don't know about us today. I get out of prison. I go in 74. The first time I get out is 85. I'm in New Haven, Connecticut. I asked a high school student, what do you know about the Black Panther Party? He asked me, was it a martial arts group? 11 years. How did that happen? Because this system is good at reconquest. The 60s shook them up. We shook them up, even for a minute. It was good, even for a minute. But they got it together really quickly, too. And they know what to do. You see what they do in Iraq, you know? Knock all that stuff down, put American ideology in there, you know, from prostitution to all the other bullshit about this fake democracy, you know. But they did it in our communities. When they destroyed Panthers and other groups, they flooded our communities with drugs and guns. Culturally, just dealing with television and movies, blaxploitation movies. Turn on the television, you get comedy and athletes. Who are the spokespersons now? Integrationists, people that's into black capitalism. You don't hear our voices no more. You don't hear Angela Davis. You don't hear Huey P. Newton, Eldridge Cleaver. You hear people who are trying to fit in because the system knows in this new neo-colonial situation, you need to get those who are willing to be Uncle Toms so that that potential resistance is quelled quickly, even before it starts. So the 80s, I'm at the end of the 80s, there's nothing. Going into the 90s, nothing. And it wasn't until the Panther movie comes out that people start to ask questions and then begin to find that there's still Panthers in there. Geronimo Pratt is still in. All these other people are still in from the Weather Underground. Then people start asking questions. But then 9/11 happens. So then we get knocked back again. People don't want to even ask about it. They don't even want to bring up the topic because of all the hyper-patriotism that's going on. But our fighters, our revolutionaries, our organizers, our thinkers are still behind walls. And now some of them are dying. Now, I went in with them. We was all there in the 70s. I mean, we was in places together. We make a commitment to each other. They, you know, like, Ashanti, you got parole. I'm like, yeah, okay, man. You know, the thing is, I get out, I work for them to help get them out. And even back then, it was still like, we get you out by any means necessary, whatever works. You know, but things had changed. You can't just, like, be on the corners anymore and talk revolution and brother or sister be like, yo, where, what you want me to do? Then it's like, people like, oh, man, you from that period? I thought all you were dead. Different, but it hurts. Now you got to figure out how to get that attention again. And I'm telling you the truth, we haven't figured that out yet. We still haven't. Because the power of the dollar bill, the power of American cultural capitalism is great. Get rich or die trying, you know? And now you even got, they're trying to push the black Republicans. It's that they continue to bombard our communities. And what they do to our communities, they do to other communities of color, other poor communities, and people in general. Keep them in sync. Keep them in line so that their minds don't go to revolution, rebellion, insurgency. Do it. You know, but we show the possibilities because even when it seems like they got us, here comes something happen. Here comes Seattle, you know. Then here comes the Zapatistas. And then all these other incidents of people, like, from nowhere, seemingly, they uprise. And then sometimes very creative ways and giving us different ways to like organize. So I look at it, I'm like, okay, I don't have to be depressed. We can still do this. If one person fights back, we can do this. If one person still dreams, we can do this. But we gotta get to them political prisoners. It's hard when you gotta go visit them. You wanna lie to them and say, hey man, I think they got us. But when you don't have to, you can tell them like, yeah man, listen, I know we haven't quite pulled it together yet, but people are fighting back. They're fighting back. And they say, well listen, just figure out ways to involve us, you know. Some of them can come to terms with dying inside as long as they know that we're carrying this on out here and have not forgotten them. You know, they know it's tough because what goes on in the prison is a microcosm of what goes on out here. It's a microcosm, you know. They just want us to remember them. They want to be free. They would love to be free, but we know on the outside, and they know too from the Panther days, from the 60s, that power is really with the people. It's with the people. It's one of the reasons why, you know, why I became increasingly an anarchist is because I want power to the people where it stays with the people. Everything is with the people. And not just you say that and then after all is said and done, you got a small clique of people who are really calling the shots, you know? I want to figure out how to make a Zapatista-style revolution here in the United States that brings all of us into this picture, how we are, not erasing who we are, but also respecting all of our different ways of fighting back. But I know that ultimately to get them political prisoners out from Earth Animal to Move 9 to Marilyn Buck, David Gilbert, and all the Panthers and others in prison, it's got to come from us. It's got to come from us in a way that poses a political consequence to this system if they don't free Momia. If they don't give medical attention to Seth Hayes. We got to be that fist that say, if you don't, other things may well happen. Now, that's not necessarily nice. But you got to see, just like when Rob Los Ricos spoke and Jeff, and I got to tell y'all, I'm really proud of y'all. Very proud of y'all. But they bring up just how murderous this system is. There's a sense of urgency here, you know, and we can't take it lightly. All of our lives are on the line. All of them. Indigenous nations say, think of the next seven generations. We got to do that. And we also got to think of those who've been in prison for the last 30, 40 years. Because when we get them, we are bringing not only them, but whose shoulders they stood on. So we're bringing the ancestors and the children who have yet to be born into our scope. Knowing that there's nothing this system can do for us. Nothing. Not a solid thing. Unless we make them. And we're making them only until we can finally get ourselves in that position where we used to say in the 60s also, a blade in the throat of fascism. I hate to get graphic. But when you feel the pain, that's what you want. When Ken tells me about Patrice Lumumba, his son, I feel the pain, you know, in him. Like, oh man, he done snatched up another one of our children. Can't theorize about it too much. You can't just be on a, you want the correct political position. We gotta get his son, we gotta figure out how to get his son home. You know, guilty, innocent don't matter to me. Momia, guilty or innocent, don't matter to me. You know. It matters what we do. The best things that have been happening in terms of political prisoners, and I'm going to end, is that groups that had really not been working together and really maybe saw no reason have begun to work together. The liberation movements and animal and the earth movements. Because many of us on the liberation movements look at animal and earth just the same way that the media projects you, that you all, these young white kids with all these funny looks, and you're hugging trees, and you're throwing red paint on people with fur coats, and like, why do we want to mess with them? until you are in situations where you may be able to talk, which I was, Daniel McGowan, Andy Stepanian, and the folks around Shaq, because I'm from New York. And then I got to step back and say, oh, that's what you're about. I said, okay, now I get it. And you go to one of the conferences and you see these documentaries on what they do to the animals. Just slaughter them. And you have to think, boy, man is a motherfucker. A motherfucker. The same one that did this to us, Africans, and they enslaved indigenous folks too. You know, so I mean, like, slaved them, lynched them, did everything else. Even the Italians and the Irish, everybody almost had a taste of this lynching and treated bad. But it's when you see this, you gotta see how you can't change this thing, get rid of it. It's just that we gave it our best in the 60s. Some of them been in there and longer than many of you, your age right now. You can't do it without having them in your plans. You got to put them on your agenda. You got to. They are our Mandelas. And I said with one talk maybe months ago, they're even better than Mandela, at least Nelson Mandela, right? I go with Winnie, you know, in many ways, in many ways. Nelson walked them into a neoliberalism. I'm telling you that our political prisoners still want a revolution. We got to get them. So whatever your issues are, earth, animals, and like the indigenous folks say, I'm talking about the two-legged, the rock people, the winged people. That's how the indigenous folks talk, and I love it, you know. I love it because it's picturesque, and I think we are very, deep down, we're all very picturesque, and when we get so Western, then we get very clinical. We take the color out of life, you know. When we think that way, then we can decenter man and begin to see ourselves as a part of all these living systems again and be able to figure out how to change these oppressive dynamics that we're a part of. I look at the New York City skyline and I'm like, man, I would love to see that thing go. You know. Industrialism, we see what it has done. So also when the movements interact, we not only really learn about each other for the first time, but we get to share visions. And sometimes your vision gets enriched by the other people's visions because it's things you didn't think about. From feminist movement, you know, the men we've led the movements for so long, but what happens when the women like say, stop it, hold it, no more. And then you got to enrich your vision because you have historically left women out, you know. And then when the first time I read Queer Theory, and I'm not going to get long, it shook me up when one of my best friends who was queer brought up to me that I made a very fucked up statement about queer people. So she gave me a book, Queer Theory. Real quick, I'm on the subway. New York is subways. I love the subways. I do most of my reading in the subways. Here I got the book, Queer Theory. I'm sitting down, but I kind of hold the book down like this. I mean, I still got my macho shit, right? So I don't want people to see that I got a book that says queer. They might think I'm queer. As I'm struggling with this, I am internally going through this process until I get to the point like, what the fuck am I doing? Read the book like you normally read it. And so in reading it, I'm also challenging myself in terms of my perspective because queer theory is telling me something about identity, you know, different lifestyles and what historical forces have done and what capitalism does more than just exploit a class. It ruins people for all kinds of different reasons. So now my vision of the world changes more. It becomes more inclusive of a lot more lifestyles than I had maybe in the 60s. And it's always the challenge. When we get to these political prisoners and you start talking to them, they open your minds up to a reality that you probably didn't know. And I'm not talking about the reality of the prison. You're going to learn about that if you ever go visit. But when they start telling their stories about their people's struggles, then you have to begin to include that in who you are, if we're going to make this revolution work. So like the Zapatistas say, we can create a world where many worlds exist, but that starts with where we are right now, including folks who have been historically left out, from the voices of women to the bodies of prisoners, and especially political prisoners. So figure out ways to put them in to what you do. Today I sat down and wrote Patrice Lumumba. I said yesterday I was going to do it, and Paulette, no, man, me writing letters to the political prisoners, I ain't that good at it. But like I just felt you yesterday, and I'm like, oh my God, it could be my son. You know, I got to write him a letter, because sometimes that's all it calls for. And when it calls for something like just writing a letter, or the political prisoners say, call this number, because they treating me like this, I need a doctor. That may be all they're asking us to do, and we should be jumping on that like ice cream, vegan ice cream.
Yeah. Okay.
But I want you to feel, I'm playful and I'm optimistic. I am that way because you stay optimistic. You do things that give me a reason to go on. Because it's been rough, but I will not give this empire that pleasure of having a victory over me. You know? No, just right. So, Rob Los Ricos is out, Jeff is out, Trey is out, and I knew about Trey too, so all three of them I actually have seen for the first time, knew all about them, because others in their movements and us started collaborating. And I'm like, oh man, that's who they are, that's what they did, right on, right on, right on. We can do this together. We can figure out how to do it together in ways that respects who we are, in the ways that enrich our vision, so that we can get the world, many worlds exist, and that we deserve. We deserve the best. We deserve it. Empire, down. Down, down, down. And then we can, like Emma say, we can have that party where we kind of dancing on there a little. You know what I'm saying? We can do that. So let's get ready by doing it in ways that we really do enjoy each other, but that we also know that we got to be loving, we got to be nurturing, we got to be understanding, because it's hard. A lot of wear and tear, and they're going to hit us. But we will develop to the point where we can hit them back. And the last thing, like the anarchist saying that says, it's not so much about overthrowing the government. It's really about us pulling out and creating our own world in a way that the government gets lost in the shuffle. Because really, it's our energy, and I think Rob was saying that too. It's our energy that really keeps them going. Let's stop giving it to them. Let's give it to each other. The 60s taught us that. Let's do this, people. We are together. We are the people. Right on?
Power to
the people. Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Right on. Right on. Did I talk too long?